Good morning and welcome to Step Into the Light. We're your hosts. I'm Patty Sheen.
And I'm Jeanelle Fury. Thank you for listening.
Together, we will introduce you to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light.
And those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light.
Good morning. We're so glad to have you with us today. Author Gail Kittleson, our guest for today, writes World War II fiction, among other things. Her Women of the Heartland brand, which includes a novella and seven novels with several more in the works, honors the era's make-do women and men. Gail co-wrote two nonfiction books featuring stories of wartime food and the holidays. She writes her own blog, facilitates workshops and retreats, and derives satisfaction from mentoring other writers. Gail and her retired Army chaplain husband enjoy their grandchildren, gardening, and learning about history. Gail writes from their northern Iowa home. Good morning, Gail. Welcome to Step Into the Light.
Hi, Patty. Thanks for having me.
This is Jean. Thank you for being available today.
Hi, Jean. Thanks.
So, Gail, you've been published in both fiction and nonfiction genres. Which came first?
Nonfiction. I wrote a memoir before I wrote anything else. So.
Okay. And between the two, what would you say you like the best, or do you have a preference?
Well, that's one of those impossible questions. I would have to say it's a tie, a close tie, but actually a fiction. Well, memoir borrows a lot from fiction, so I see it as a really unique genre in the first place because of that. And I think with fiction, the advantage it has over nonfiction is that people can learn without even trying. They pick up a book, maybe not to learn, but just to be entertained, and then If it's historical fiction, they're bound to learn something usually in the process.
Yeah, that's very true. My husband loves the fiction-y kind of based on a true story or inspired
right.
by a true story. And then we have to go back and look. You know, well, did this really
exactly.
happen or was this the inspired part?
Yeah.
You know, that kind
right.
of thing.
Yeah, we just did that, my husband and I, with one of those British films the other night, and it sure seemed like it couldn't be true. And in that case, it wasn't.
Oh,
but now
okay.
we know. Now
I was
going
to say, usually we find the parts that we think couldn't be true are the ones that were true.
Mm.
And it's like, oh my goodness, just crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you should bring that up about memoir, because I attended a writer's conference this weekend, and we had quite a bit of time between classes, and it was all on Zoom. We had a lot of time between classes when we were able to visit and get to know each other. And one lady had mentioned that she was writing a memoir, but then she thought it would be better to just make it a fiction story. So we discussed that at length.
Yeah.
What would be best.
Well, sometimes, if there's someone that can be hurt by a memoir in the family, then it's really nice to disguise it in fiction.
That's a great point. I had not even considered that. Yeah.
Or use a pen name, but it's tough using a pen name because it's your story. So
right.
I don't quite get that, but I know sometimes people do it.
The only reason I use my pen name is because Patricia and Gonzalez is really long and it's very common on the internet. It's like Jane Smith, so
yeah.
That's why I go with my Patty Sheen. But Gail, speaking of this whole thing, I was going to say, you know, it has been 5 years since you first appeared on Step Into the Light. You were my guest member of 2015. I had barely started the show then. And if I remember right, the memoir that you wrote was entitled Catching Up with Daylight, right?
That's right. That's right.
Yes,
so it fit your show really well.
I found that book just the other day when I was going through some things. I said, that's Gail's book. So tell us, what have you been doing since then? I know you have been very, very busy with your writing these past 5 years. So catch us up on what you've been writing.
Okay. Well, the first thing I wrote was, it was called In This Together, and it's not available right now. but it's been rewritten. I've rewritten that completely because I learned a lot since when I first wrote that. It was still a good story, but yeah, I've learned a lot. So that has not been republished yet. It is going to be part of a Christmas collection that's coming out, a Christmas set this year, and so that should be fun with several other authors. After that, I wrote a series, and that's kind of how I figured out my Women of the Heartland brand. I shouldn't say figured it out. My publisher did. I mean, Women of the Heartland came to me, but he's the one who explained to me, you know, that's your brand. That's what mm-hmm. brand means. And so that was cool. And that there are three books in that. It's In Times Like These, With Each New Dawn, and A Purpose True. So those take the reader into the lives of two young rural American women. And one gets married right out of high school and works hard on her husband's farm. And the other marries young too, but she follows her RAF pilot husband to Europe when his plane is downed and goes to London to search for him. So the old art, kind of a lost art almost, of letter writing is celebrated in that book because Kate and Addie, the two friends, encourage each other through letters all the way through the book. So that's that first one. And then the second one is more Kate's story, what happens to her in London. She has a couple of big losses. I don't want to ruin anything for anybody.
Right.
A couple of big losses and decides to take a huge risk and join the secret, become a secret agent and drop in, parachute in behind enemy lines. In the Auvergne in France. So a Basque shepherd turned mountain guide becomes part of the story. And Addie's still there, but back in London at that time. The third one, in A Purpose True, these two girls, both of their stories find resolution, I guess I should say.
Okay.
Yeah, and then after that I wrote The Cause, which is a story of in the Philippines, the war in the Philippines, and after the Bataan Death March, those men were in prison. And I did a lot of research on that. And as I did, I thought, you know, we're talking about 70,000 prisoners taken. And I thought there just had to be some who escaped it because it's jungle country, mountainous. And surely, some of them escaped. And so I searched and searched to find out whether that was true or not, because it was just totally my own thought. My husband said, I asked him if he thought it was credible, and he doesn't too often say anything I think of as credible. So I thought, yeah, this has, because he's an Army guy. So I really pursued that, and the resulting story is that some did escape. And what happened in their lives. After that, I wrote Kiss Me Once Again, which is a little lighter from what you've heard so far. Maybe you think I'm getting into the kind of the heavier parts of war, if there is a light part, and
yes.
It's true. And Kiss Me Once Again is shorter. It's a novella, and it's about a woman who works in her father's garage in the Midwest during World War II, because her brother is deployed with the military, and it's her story. She sacrifices a scholarship to Iowa State University in order to do this, and and she's given up on love, totally given up on it, because her betrothed was lost on the Arizona in Pearl Harbor. So, you know, she just pretty much hunkers down for a life of sacrifice, taking care of her father. And when her brother comes back, she just figures she'll just plunge ahead and get the best kind of job she can and make it through life. It's a story about second chances and surprises being around the corner when we have no clue that they are. And let's see, what happened next? I think that
you have been busy.
That brings us.
You haven't let the moss grow under your feet, that's for sure.
No, well, you know what? I started late. I'm a late bloomer, My website, the title of it is Dare to Bloom. And for me, I didn't have the confidence to write, even though I knew as a teenager that that's what I was supposed to do. So I came from a real shame-based background, and it took decades for me to get the courage to actually to write with a passion that I had. So if it looks like I've done a lot in a short time, maybe I have, but I wasted a lot of years before that. And I'm so thankful to be able to still have a chance to write.
Yeah, so, and making up for all that lost time.
I'm trying. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like you because here I am, probably a considerable number of years older than either one of you. And,
I don't know.
I still lack that confidence. You know, I mean, well, I know that I have the capability to create a story, but oh man, you know, getting it out there and actually sending it to somebody just scares me so much because I'm just so afraid that they're going to say, well, maybe your critique group really liked this, but guess what? We don't.
Well, I had a lot of that. So I heard a lot, I have had a lot of rejections and, you know, thought about giving up different times, but I guess I really was destined to do it because I just couldn't. I couldn't give up.
Mm-hmm.
So however you want to say that, writing is a vocation for me. It's really not optional at this point. That's how I feel about it. It's my,
right,
my vocation. It's everything. It's God's gift to me, and I don't know. I'm just so grateful for it.
It does take a certain fortitude to be able to pursue things even after you've gotten the rejection because it is, you know, I think a quote once that said, being a writer and not wanting rejection is like being a fighter and not wanting to get punched.
There you go. That would be a very good analogy. I love it. And that's the truth because, I mean, it's just devastating.
It is.
Really devastating.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then you go back and you take a few more online courses or do whatever, go to a conference and do some workshops and think, oh, well, I guess I had a little more to learn.
Sure.
And, yeah.
Hey, Patty, what were you going to offer? I had another question, but I wanted you to go first.
Okay. I was just going to say, Gail, once again at this conference, we got to talking about that, how you almost feel like you're destined to write. And I said, yeah, no kidding. I said, my biggest fear is when I die, God's going to say, okay, what did you do with this gift that I gave you? You know, kind of like the story of the talents in the Bible. And it's like, oh, man,
right,
that's a scary thought to have to be accountable, you know. So I'm
that's one of my, that passage has always bugged me. I mean, it kind of urged me on, too, because I wasn't using my talents either for that. I encouraged others, and you know, I taught writing to college students, and was a great cheerleader. But that's different from actually putting yourself out there. And I think you do a lot of that encouraging. You provide a platform for authors, and that's got to mean something, don't you think?
Yeah. I agree. That is huge. Yes. Hey, Gail, you had mentioned while you were catching us up how you found your brand. And I think it was beautiful that you offered, that you had help doing that, right? I mean, it isn't something that necessarily we do all every piece of it ourselves. Can you talk a little bit more about that and how instrumental that other people are in helping you create these stories?
Oh, good grief. Yes, I can talk about that. My publisher, it took me a long time to find him, and I had some other ones on the way, and I learned, you know, which publishing companies I would never go with again. And they helped me, too. They helped me, too.
Sure.
They showed me what I didn't want. And it's just like, for me, it's like the way I grew up. It wasn't ideal, but you can learn either through good example or you can learn through a lousy example that's not what you want to do. Okay, so I think either way, you know, we're here to to grow and learn, and if that's what you want, is to grow and learn, life gives ample opportunities and are not all fun. But as far as, like, the people helping me with my writing, I remember going to a boot camp online many years ago, and that was extremely helpful. And then there's all the books that have been written, and the one I like immensely is Donald Moss, the Breakout novel. I've got that workbook, and that has helped me a whole lot. You know, he has you go back through your scenes, and he teaches you something, and then you go through your scenes and see if that happened in there, and if it didn't, then how you could make it happen. That was extremely helpful to me, and I've never met him in person, but he still helps me. Yeah, and so he doesn't know that, but he must believe that writing a book does help people, or he wouldn't have written that. So, and he must have hoped he could help people. Yeah,
sure.
I've had lots of beta readers, you know, people who just, friends who just would read for me and give me feedback. I've been stuck on plot line. Plotting isn't the easiest thing for me. Characters come to me. They're the meat and potatoes, I guess, of my book. And then the plot, they kind of whisper it in my ear as we go along. But sometimes I get stuck. And I've had friends who I would call and say, oh, brother, what could I have happened to this person so that this will result? And, you know, they're much better at this than I am. And they would say, oh, well, just have her father die. That's, you know.
Wow.
Oh, okay. I never thought of that. And so that's been hard for me to learn to do terrible things to my characters because you just don't want to hurt anybody. You don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. That's just who I am. And sometimes life hurts your characters really badly in order to make them become who they're supposed to be. Yeah,
that's true.
I've had lots of encouragement along the way. My husband has been encouraging. His father was a World War II hero at the time, his 18-year-old kid, you know, but he was chosen to be with a real elite, the very first group of Alamo Scouts ever, and trained in New Guinea, and an Iowa farm guy with overalls on when he went in, and, you know, a uniform on when he, a week later, and just an intrepid warrior. And so I think that background, my husband is nuts about military stuff and was in the military himself. He's retired now. But so if I'm stuck on something or I'll tell him what it is I'm writing about, then I remember one time he went for his local pastor's meeting at a town that has a bigger library and brought back a stack of books for me and said, you know, I think if you read these, this will help you a lot with what you're doing. Yeah, and that kind of thing is just really almost unasked for, you know. These things come to you, and it's usually through people. So
yes, how nice to have that kind of support,
right,
Gail.
Yeah.
And the encouragement of teachers has always just impressed me. I when you mentioned your friend who said, well, have her father die, and I'm thinking, it reminded me of a class I took, and she was describing how horrible and miserable and awful things must be for that hero to then surface and rise again. And she said, if all else fails, burn the house down. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty extreme. I'm going to remember that.
Yeah, there you go. Something bad, you know. Well, you know, the best compliment I've ever had on my writing, on my fiction, is from a woman. I was at a one-day workshop with her in Austin, Minnesota, and a great workshop leader. And we got to know each other, this other participant and I. And then that afternoon, I was supposed to talk about my books at this sort of a Renaissance-type thing outdoors. We had time to spend together before that happened, and she had not written a book yet. And as we talked, we got to know each other, and she said, I don't know if I'd be interested in reading your books because I don't like Christian fiction. And it's just too easy. And life isn't real, the it's portrayed. And honestly, that's how I feel about a lot of books that are out there. They're not real life because things can't be all rosy. They just can't. We're humans, and it's not like that. So she said, you know, I'm going to, after she heard me speak, then she decided to go ahead and buy a book. And I said, just please let me know what you think. And she wrote to me and said, after some weeks or months, thank you for not giving your characters any easy ways out or any pat answers. That is the best compliment I have ever had as a writer, I think.
Yeah, that is beautiful. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I forget what the question was, but I'm here. I am blathering on. oh, who has
That's
helped
okay.
me, I guess.
Yes.
I should say criticism has helped too, you know. An editor at Bethany House. I've never been published by them, but I sure tried. And the last time I was rejected there, the editor said, this one scene on page blah, 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 whatever you do, we can't use this right now, but whatever you do, keep that scene because that's a wonderful scene. And
that's awesome.
And I have kept it, and that book has never been published yet. I haven't even tried. It's just one of those that I might resurrect someday. I don't know. But it was back at the beginning. I thought, okay, the only thing you could possibly ever write is pioneer stories, kind of like Janet Oakes, that I like, always have liked, and have touched so many lives. And, you know, I was led a different way, but that was an attempt to be Janet Oakes, that book. Yeah, and, you know, I don't know. I think it might be publishable with what I know now if I decide to expend the energy and effort it would take to make that happen. I don't know if I'm willing right now, but we'll see. I'm too interested in World War II at this point. I think.
Gail,
pardon?
God will put that on your heart if he intends for you to write that book, and he'll know the right time, and that's the beauty of that.
Absolutely.
So speaking of World War II, Gail, there are many fascinating time periods in history, but World War II seems to have captured your interest, and as it's reflected in your writing. What is it about that time period that intrigues you?
Yeah, the word is actually I'm addicted. I'm completely, utterly, irrevocably, impossibly addicted to the era. I've been asked that before, and I've thought through, and I don't know. But I keep wondering, and the older I get, the more I realize I'm a baby boomer, and World War II was over, right? But it really affected us. It really did, because of the way our parents were, what they had gone through, and the way the culture was at that time with all the men coming back from the war. My dad was one of them. You know, he was not an 18-year-old like the majority of soldiers. He was in his mid-20s when he was drafted, and he was the only son on a family farm, but he still had to go. And I think I don't know. I shouldn't say he was bitter, but I'm wondering if he was really bitter about that because he was it takes time to get the money to try to buy your own farm. He was working with his father, and then his dad was stuck there alone with no help during the war. And, you know, there was a lot of, injustice. I mean, county draft boards and who got to go, who went and who didn't go, things like that. So I think in that right there, the war affected me, and then in many other ways. Too numerous to mention, but I didn't even realize that until I started writing World War II fiction. I never thought about World War II affecting me. But it was my parents' era, and my mother hated wearing shoes, and she would often be working around the house in her bare feet, and she would be singing a World War II song. Well, you know, that kind of thing goes down into your soul. And you don't ever quite remove yourself from it. So I guess I don't know. I think it's partly who my parents were. Besides that, it's just in an endless, it's like an artesian well of endless bubbling up of stories. I don't know if it'll ever stop. I mean, I'm sure they felt the same way about the Civil War. You know, the stories just go on and on. Individual human pathos, and you can never come to the end of it, and that's how I feel about World War II. And what's interesting is it's probably true about the Korean War as well, but that war didn't really touch me. I mean, our family, in the same way. I don't know. It's a question I keep thinking about. Obviously, don't really know the answer to.
Well, how many people refer to World War II era as the greatest generation still to this day?
Right.
Because there was just so much sacrifice during that time period, and there was so much patriotism, and just about everybody gave up something on one level or another for that war.
Absolutely.
Whether you were soldier or a person staying at home or whatever. I mean, look at the women that went to work in the factories that had never worked a day in their life, and all of a sudden they were willing to learn all these skills that they would never have dreamed of learning. And I mean, there's just, and I don't want to use this word loosely, but there's almost a romance to that period of time. Those people were just so intriguing and so self-sacrificing, I think.
The value of things as well. The sheet metal factory that my grandfather worked in converted everything to the war effort, and with the scraps that were left over, my grandfather made cookie sheets, and you could tell they're handmade. You can tell the
wow.
And I still have them, and they're my husband's favorite. He's like, look at these old things. That's a good workmanship there. I go, and that's not wanting to waste a thing. You know, it was just amazing the mindset that went into that.
Oh, I love that. I love that. You mean he brought home the excess after work and made them, or what?
He made them at work with the excess. It was just a sheet. You know, I mean, it was just as big as a cookie sheet, and he didn't want to waste it, so he made a cookie sheet out of it.
And cool.
He would, yeah.
Well, now there is an example of what I just got through saying. That's a story I've never heard of. And, I mean, there are millions, probably more. And
I'll send you a picture.
I can't come to the end. Please do. That's wonderful. I'll maybe put it in a novel someday.
Whole new book.
Well, I know nothing about the sheet metal, the steel industry, nothing. And so quite often that's what God calls me to write about. Something I don't have a clue about. And so it demands a lot of research, and I'm a martyr enough, I'm willing to do it, because it really takes a martyr's mindset to do the amount of research you have to do to be authentic.
Gail, two other books that you wrote that we didn't mention were your nonfiction books about World War II, the Food and Holiday books.
Yeah.
And I have copies
sorry.
Of them.
Uh-huh. Good.
So they were quite interesting. So throughout all of this writing of World War II, Gail, do you feel that you have been led on a particular journey as you crafted each of these books, and what have you learned on that journey?
Well, absolutely, and I suppose it's a different thing for each book. In Kiss Me Once Again, I learned what it's like to write about someone who, her name was Glenora, and she was tall and gangly, and you know, some people go through that in their teenage years, but she never grew out of it, and she felt unlovable, I guess, because of that, and I just learned about her kind of person. I'm short and petite, and I have definitely felt that I wasn't pretty enough or, you know, desirable. But with her, it was different. It was more of her whole persona. She kind of fit well into mechanic's pants to work under cars and trucks and tractors in her dad's shop. Anyway, so I guess, you know, just the different kinds of characters that come to me. They each teach me something. I'm trying to think of another one. The research, for me, for researching each one, that's how I get guided. if I get stuck, I go read some more. And I really like to emphasize primary sources. I, of course, use the internet because it's so easy and so accessible, but you can't trust it, and you need to verify. And if you could find a primary source, it's so much better. That happened to me. Yeah, that happened to me just a couple weeks ago, or last week, actually. It's a long story, but through a guy I got connected with who's a river guide in the area of the Texas Hill Country that I'm writing about, he gave me the name of a man who lives in the ghost town area that I wanted to set my story in. And so when I called him, I think we talked for about 50 minutes, 5-0, the first time.
Nice.
And he is just like a walking encyclopedia. And he said, you know, I think you need to come down here before you get that book published. I think you need to really see what our country's like. And so I'm looking at tickets right now. Seeing if
nice.
I can swing that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Seeing if I can swing that, because I take his advice seriously. And I have never been in the Hill Country, and, you know, I did my best through what I read, and I had a couple friends who traveled through there, took pictures for me, told me what they thought about it. I talked with another person who is descended from the man who founded that town, and, you know, learned a lot, put together this book, and then I met this guy. He actually owns the land that the little town is on. And you know, has climbed to the top of the big granite outcropping on there probably 100 times, he said. And I think what this one is teaching me is you're never done with your research. I mean, I had this ready. I had sent it to a couple of beta readers, actually, and thought, okay, this is pretty much the way it's going to be. Not so much now, because he blew holes in a couple of my theories. And and so I'm back at the drawing board, and so those primary research resources that you choose, really, for me anyway, they guide me about whether I'm done or not. This time they said to me, "No, you're not done. You have quite a bit of work left.
Yeah.
Get with it, you know." So I think, I don't know. What is that lesson? It's just keep searching, tenacity, right up to the time you write the end and after you write the end. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and Gail, you already know you won't regret that trip, but I will offer, having been there, you will not regret that trip. It is fantastic.
Uh-huh.
It's a beautiful part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going that far, I'm going to encourage you to go to San Antonio, if you haven't been there, and do a tour of the missions. You know, everybody knows about the Alamo because that's what's the center of their city, but the missions outlying are just as beautiful, if not more.
Yeah.
So that would be worthwhile.
Yeah, well, we'll see how many days I can do this. I think I only have a short window, but I will fly into San Antonio. I think that's where I have to fly into, right?
Yeah, it would be. I would expect that's the closest, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll be close to the missions, but maybe not this.
You
but
will.
I'm going back down. I mean, we already have the launch set for this book. I am planning a trip in September. And I'm speaking to a historical society in that county, but here I am, and I don't feel the book is ready, so I'm hitting the grindstone to get it ready and to do whatever I have to do to make it as credible as it can possibly be.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
So do you feel, Gail, in this writing journey and all of that you've encountered, do you kind of feel like sometimes that's a definite leading from God that, hey, going in the wrong direction, you need to kind of turn to the left a little bit or to the right a little bit?
Oh, absolutely. Like a slap in the face. You bet. It is. It's definite guidance. Meeting that man over the phone and what he had to say, absolutely it was guidance.
That is pretty neat. That you would encounter someone like that and he would encourage you and say, hey, you need to get down here and really learn what you're writing about.
Yeah, he challenged me. I mean, and it's like, okay, I think you're right, buddy.
And I'll love to hear when you get back, Gail, what else this might spark. It seems to me that I know your intention is to wrap up this book, but I bet you'll get something even more out of it.
Oh, undoubtedly. Undoubtedly, I will. Yep. That's the way God works. We obey under duress sometimes. It's like I had not planned this, but then he shows us the real reason we're down there. Yeah.
Right.
So,
right.
And God, just keep open to that.
Absolutely. Now, you also offer workshops, Gail, which is how I became introduced to you. When did that begin, and how has it grown?
Oh, well, I mean, it's not that I put a shingle out and said I'm a workshop leader, but, I mean, like some people do, and they're known as workshop leaders, but that began years ago before I ever thought I would be writing fiction. I presented for hospice, and at the time it was called parish nursing. Now I think it's called community health nursing. Anyway, I did a lot of workshops for them across the nation about self-care for the caregiver and about grief and loss and how writing can be employed in going through that kind of a journey. I've been doing workshops actually for a long time, just not on writing. Writing has been more like the last 10, 12 years, I guess. And how do they work? I'm a people person, and I love connecting with people. I miss teaching college writing. For me, it fulfills doing workshops, gives me that connection with real people. And so this silly COVID thing has been a real pain. And so all that has had to stop, and now I'm just very excited to gear it up again. Although I have done some on Zoom, Patty, you were instrumental in me getting to do that one in Colorado.
So was there too. I think.
That was the one I was referring to. I have to say, Gail, you did an excellent job, because it is very hard to be engaging, and you were wonderful on Zoom.
Oh,
do you have a particular topic that you especially enjoy teaching on? Is there one that you really like to offer?
Oh, I love to offer them memoir one, and I also I really enjoy teaching about setting and building your setting into so it actually takes the place of a character. That's so cool. I like that, and I'm working on one now for the Cedar Falls, Iowa Christian Writing Workshop, which is in later in June. And it's about researching historical characters. And I'm having a blast working on that one, as you can imagine, because characters are the first thing that comes to me. And the thing that I feel like holds interest the most, even above the plot, I guess. I know that probably most people don't think that, but if you have really strong characters, even if you screw up in the plot a little bit, I still think they're going to love your story. Yeah. I mean, that's what it is for me. When I love a story, it's because of a character, and that character is with me. Well, you know, Scarlett O'Hara is still with me, and I read her when I was 16.
There you go. Yep.
You know, it's the character.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so that gives you some ideas about the ones I like to do.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Gail, as you know, here on the show, it's been a long time since you've been on here, but we do have guests who talk about difficult periods in their lives when they were kind of in a dark place and found their way back to light. And then again, we interview people who bring others out of darkness and back to light through their writing and things like that for other ministries. Is there a particular time when you felt that you were particularly challenged, maybe in your writing career? You just felt like things were going well and were kind of dark, and how did you come out of that?
Yes, I've had more than one time like that, and I kind of answered this before. I think I came through it and out of it because I love writing. If you don't love writing, if you really don't love it, then this is no career for you. And it's the same thing with research. If you don't like to research, then if you're not just absolutely splitting with curiosity about your topic and can't get enough, can't read enough about it, then I just think you need to do something else. I mean, because
that was, wow, that's an excellent point, Gail. That is a point well taken.
Well, I don't know. For me, it's the curiosity about my topics and the war, and it's because I love the process. I love editing. I relish when somebody edits for me and shows me what I missed, and always that happens, always, always, no matter how many times I've gone through a manuscript. Sometimes even after it's published, which is just mortifying, but it happens. It just is part of the whole thing. And that's the part I like about it least, I would say. But even that, then I get to go fix it again.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. I love the process. And I believe in writing. I believe it has power. And especially with memoir, I think you change when you write a memoir. It changes you if it's a true memoir. And that happens with me. And then I think that goes over to fiction as well. I become a better person because of what my characters go through, because of their determination and their tenacity and all those good things.
I like that. Yeah.
Absolutely. So you had referenced your website previously, Gail, and on the cover, it has a beautiful flower arrangement over which are the words, "Learn from history, dare to bloom." So what is your hope for visitors? What do you want people to gain by visiting your website?
Oh, well, if I can be crass, I'd like them to discover my books and order them.
Sure, absolutely.
That's the whole point.
Well, that's the whole point of having a website, right? Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have a website. I'm not the type of person to be online. The only reason I have a Facebook page and all the rest of it is because of my books. And it's because people like Dorothy in Until Then, she's the only real-life heroine I've ever written about. I mean, she was a real woman from Waterloo, Iowa, who was a nurse, gave 5 years of her life in 6 different theaters of the war. I even saying that just boggles my mind. She gave so much, and I want the world to know who she is. I want them to know what she gave and how much she sacrificed. That's the least I can do to honor her and the other women like her in World War II. So that's the bottom line for me. And my website is just the whole Dare to Bloom thing. It used to be just called Dare to Bloom. I added that history part just about a year ago, I think, maybe even less than a year, because I was working on brand again and thought, you know, it's not just about daring to bloom. That was my memoir, daring to put yourself out there. This is about learning from history and then doing something with that in the present. So that title has kind of evolved for my website. So the website is there for people to discover my characters. And I don't know, I don't do the greatest job on the website. I mean, I'm not good. I'm not techie, and I'm not good at promotion, and I am woefully sorry about that, but I try my hardest and do my best because it's so much work, and the whole point is to gain new readers and introduce these war scenarios and characters to them. If I don't promote well, you know, it's almost like, what's the point? But I keep on writing anyway.
You got to do that.
I have to. I really do. Yeah.
Well, speaking of promotion, Gail, if you there's, you know, hundreds of thousands probably of books about the World War II era out there.
Right.
So in promoting your books, what would you tell readers is unique about your particular World War II era books that would set them apart from other writers and draw readers to them?
Mm-hmm. Well, they're about plain, simple, everyday, rural people. And all of them end up you know, some of them end up in the Philippines, some of them end up behind the lines in France, some of them they contribute to the war in ways they never would have imagined. And I think that's the reality of that time. These people had no intention a year before Pearl Harbor of ending up parachuting into enemy territory.
Right.
They had no thought of this. And it's like that was part of God's plan for them. I mean, that's what he allowed for them, ways for them to contribute to the war.
As a reader of your books, I have not read all of them, but as a reader of your books, if someone had asked me that question, I would have answered in the same way. So there you are.
Oh,
you hit the nail on the head.
Well, I must have done something right here then.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's the truth.
I haven't read all of them. I was thinking I had, but then when you mentioned some of the storylines, I guess I didn't, or else my retention is getting so horrible that I can't remember what I've read anymore. But
yeah.
I know I'm sure I have just about all of them, Gail, if not in probably on Kindle. So
Good.
The ones I
that's
have read
wonderful.
I thoroughly enjoyed. So
I think the other thing about my books would be that that word make do. When I think about describing my characters, they are make do people. And so were the people of lots of other eras. But it's that whole concept of you take what life gives you and you do the best you possibly can. And sometimes it takes a Herculean effort. And that's what that generation was asked to do. They were asked to do impossible things. I mean, look at Dunkirk. They were asked to do impossible things, and they did them. And that mindset, you know, whatever happens to me when I wake up today, I'm going to, there's a quote, the Lord, there's nothing the Lord and I can't handle together, or something like that. That's the way they were. It was like, we find a way. We'll find a way to fix this or to get around this or to, even, you know, with the spies, we'll find a way to deceive well enough that we'll make it where we need to go, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess that's another thing. I really feel like my characters are make-do people, and you can count on them. You can count on them. If they're given a mission, they may go through hell and high water, and they may suffer a lot of loss and a lot of anguish along the way and a great deal of personal sacrifice, but they will fulfill the mission, come hell or high water. I mean, they'll do it.
Exactly.
And that's I love that attitude in people, and maybe that's why I like World War II so much.
Well, Gail, you had already talked a bit about what you've got coming up, but what is next? What's the next thing that you're looking to accomplish, writing or speaking?
Well, let's see. Speaking, I would like to be able to reach more people. And I guess that means larger venues, not necessarily, though, with the whole Zoom thing. But I've been speaking for several of the ACFW state groups, and I guess I'd like to take it farther than that if it's meant to be, so I can have a wider sphere and share what I've learned through some pretty tough lessons, learning to become a writer. So that would be that. And then for my books, you know, I don't have a grand scheme or even a dream. I just, the one I'm working on right now, like I said, that I'm having to go back and go through a few more times and get some more on the boots on the ground on this one, I guess. It's such a unique book because it's about a British immigrant to the United States. And so he comes in 1938 and comes out of a pretty traumatic situation, brings his little son over here to the Texas Hill Country, and he sees the war then developing here in the States and in Britain through the eyes of an immigrant. So that's just a completely different perspective than I ever considered before. I think I mentioned I have a novella and a short story in this Christmas set that some other authors and I are putting together to come out in hopefully September. So that is on the burner, and then we'll see. I don't know. we'll see what character comes to me next.
That's outstanding.
Very good. Well, we'd like to wish you the very best with your continued writing endeavors, Gail, and with your speaking venues. And thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Gail. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye. Be in touch.
We'll do.
Okay.
Listeners, in closing, we all encounter dark periods in our lives to one degree or another. During those difficult times, strive to seek the light, knowing that when we allow it to shine through, it is so much brighter than we remembered. Thank you so much for spending time with us today. I'd like to remind you to go to pattysheene.com. That's again, PattySheene.com. There you will find links to all of the shows that we have recorded to date. And you can also find under the more information tabs links to Gail's website and social media and that of all of our guests under each show. So until next time, God bless you.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a glow.